listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host of the most, Nikki Carulla. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very special guest, a very talented soul indeed, Mr. Chris Voss, lead singer, guitarist, harmonica player of the record company. Did I get it all right?
You got it, man. Yeah. It's got strings or, you know, a harmonica or a microphone puts in front of it, I'll do the best I can with what I can do.
Well, you know, it's funny. I didn't know you played harmonica until I saw the video that you posted on the record company website for the new song or the Instagram. And I was like, damn, what can't this guy do? This is crazy. That's not an easy instrument to sound good on. And you know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's like you got to know what you're doing on that instrument, because it's like you can either sound like you're just kind of like wanking, or you can sound like you know how to play the instrument. And you have this like sense of restraint too, where you knew when to play, when not to. Is pretty tasteful.
Appreciate that. I, you know, everything's about keeping a melodic expression. I think no matter what instrument you're playing, it's like there's a very the melodies that tend to resonate with me tend to come across as very vocal.
Right.
Or you can follow along and as your ear evolves, I mean, Coltrane played with vocal. I mean, his melodies were vocal. They were just extremely mind-blowingly complex. I think you can tell when a person's playing is tethered to something deeper inside. And yeah. I've done both. We all do, where it's like sometimes you're playing and you're like, that felt like a little, I don't know. It just didn't feel like it was centered in the heart and the soul of it. Or, you know, sometimes you can get like a little carried away, you know, just getting into the, you know, you've got dexterity and you want to see what you can do. And that's all great stuff to experiment with too. But yeah, when it comes to putting something on a record, you know, you're looking for heart-filled stuff that comes from the soul, and you edit it with your mind and then you put it out. The soul tells you when it's ready.
I love that you say all that, because I always like have to go get into that place when I'm playing guitar solos, especially when I track. I don't know if you do this, but I'm always like, I always tease engineers. I'm like, all right, give me three guitar takes to just wank and do nothing musical to get all of that. Like, oh, I got to make it impressive to me or to the listener. And then like after three of those, I'm like, okay, now let's do a real one, because I just have to get some of that bullshit out that I'm like, that's like, in the ego, where I'm like, let me overplay and let me do something that's not what it's going to be on the record, and just get it out. And then it's like I get into this place where it's like, it's tasteful. It's like it has to be like melodic. It has to like lead with kind of like some sense of restraint. I think restraint's like one of the most powerful ingredients you can use. So tell me like how, when you're doing solos, either on slide or when you're playing guitar solos, tell me how you get into that place.
Slow to be in the flow, man. You know, it's like, that's something I've been saying to myself for a while. I'm a pretty quick thinker. I mean, which doesn't necessarily mean I think quick and smart. I've learned that, and feelings too. It's like, I feel, deeper if I slow the way I speak, if I slow my mind down and let myself listen. And, I think with guitar, I just learned a long time ago, it's like, though I may idolize people like Jimi Hendrix or, you know, an Eddie Van Halen or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Derek Trucks, you know, they have their voice. And I also love punk rock and old blues, like really dusty, dirty old blues. That's like,
I saw that you love the Stooges. I love that you love the Stooges.
And so to me, it's like, it's kind of like striking a balance. It's like, serve the song, serve the song, serve the song. And then when we play live, I definitely will stretch out more. And there are nights where, you know, it's not like we go you know, and I'm, we're not a jam band, but, and there are plenty of those I love. I mean, I, you know, right. Fist is great. The Dead is great. Goose, this new band that's out there. Great.
I love them.
Fantastic. So I love all that stuff. Yeah. I love all that stuff. But what I will say is, for us, it's just a more of a musical expression of the song. We're more about putting the song forward. And for myself as a player, I'm like, yes, I can play, but I think it's most interesting if I respect the song the most and then maybe rock out a bit live, take it out, feel the room, let some expression happen, and then bring it back to another song instead of like, you know, a 20-minute expression. There are people out there that can take a 20-minute solo that have been working on it their whole lives as the center of who they are.
Right.
You know, and they're the ones that can do that. I've been curating a different thing, you know.
Well, I tend to think too much when I'm playing live about soloing, because it's like on a record, it's like you're composing. And then like live, I feel like you can kind of, it's easy to meander if you don't watch yourself a little bit, you know? So like there are times where, you know, when I'm soloing where it's like, I'm always thinking in my head, like, am I meandering? Am I in my soul? Am I in my heart? And then there's moments where you get to that place where it's like nothing is like you're so present in the solo that it's like, oh, this is exactly where I'm trying to be every time. You know what I mean? You know that place when you're in it, and you know when you're not in it. And it's like sometimes it's about like completely letting go and just like letting the spirit kind of take over. And when I saw you guys play, I was like, that's what I noticed. I'm like, this cat has so much spirit in his playing.
Oh, thank you.
It was just like the perfect timing too, because, you know, I've been a touring artist for 20 years with my full band.
Right.
And I recently started a trio, and I've been obsessed with trios, like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimi Hendrix, like all the trios, Cream, all the blues trios. And that's when I came and saw you guys play. Like it was just like serendipity, and I saw you guys kill it at the Knitting Factory. So I wanted to ask you just from that perspective, because being in a trio, being in a band and then being in a trio for me was a real cool transition of like learning how to fill the space, learning how to let the space kind of be what it is when you need it to be. Tell me like how you kind of juggle a little bit of that, like space versus filling the space, because I'm just intrigued as a musician by how people are able to do that and when they don't, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, what was that? You remember the cowbell thing from SNL where he's like, use the space, explore the room, use the space, right? In that famous sketch. But why I'm bringing that up is because I'm going to say something similar. You have to embrace, we embrace space as the fourth member of this group.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, I got chills, bro. That's awesome.
It's the silent powerhouse member. And the more you respect the space, the more it gives back to you.
I love that. Wow.
And the thing I think that whether you have 50, if you have an orchestra, or you have three people, you know, you can only be so loud in a room where people can hear it. You know, I mean, once you get over the 100 dB, every 5 dB you add over that is you're getting to deafening really quick. So I've always just kind of realized at some point with this band, I just realized I'm like, they can push the faders up, you know, and then that's when people, when you embrace the space, what I have found, and I learned this from, you know, listening to old blues, and then, you know, I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Wisconsin on a dairy farm. And when I was, you know, a kid, the White Stripes were out of Detroit and they were happening. And, you know, it kind of ignited this whole thing about that. And the big lesson I took from listening to them is like, what's not there is as important as what is there. And what's not there makes what is there shine out. And what is there makes what's not there shine out.
I love the way you explain that, because it's like the inverses are just as powerful. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think space is an essential part of music. It is what creates momentum. I mean, we all know, or I'm sure most of us have heard the old adage of, you know, you don't dance to the notes, you dance to the space between the notes. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's that succession marking time, literal time, and not just time in music. Like, what time are you playing? Like 1, 2, 3. But that all is marking the time that you are living, moving through time. And it's that experience that creates the whole thing. And I mean, it's just like anything else in life, I suppose, but it's a beautiful marker, you know, and it's like, if you respect that, and that time is going by, and just embrace it. And like you said, one thing I will say, to get out, this is just a little tip for me. This works for me. You might have to find your own way to do it. But I think, like, you know, whenever I find myself in a position where I'm thinking the thoughts you were describing, like, oh, what am I doing? How do I get there? Those thoughts are behind the music already. You're behind it when you're thinking like that. You need to get back on top of it. And the way I get back on top of it, I just go, listen, in my head. Let's go like
that. Oh, I love that. That's very cool.
That's it. And that's like, it takes practice. Because then your brain will go, well, I am listening. I'm not, you know, you'll have this little argument with yourself while you're doing this thing that's extremely, you know, it's not like you're taking a walk, you know, it's like you're putting sound and out in front of people. And I think when you can drag it, that like can drags you right back to the where you're at in the moment. And you that's helped me. Like, so if I find myself floating out, I just go, listen, in my head. And it's like, I'm back. And if I got to do it again, listen, you know, whatever I got to say inside of my head.
Yeah. Well, it centers you. That's what's cool. It's like, it forces you to listen. You know, I always say, you know, the true art to music is listening. And, you know, one of the things, just to revert back to the space, I came from classical music. So I was always studying composers. And Debussy once said, music is the space between the notes. And that was the first like rabbit hole. I was like, oh my God, it's not about all the notes you play. It's sometimes about the notes you don't play and just getting to that place. You know what I mean? So, but let's take it way back. You grew up in Wisconsin. You said you grew up in a little farm town. Tell me what the city was. And also, how did music become like such an important influence in your life? Did you have family? Was there a music teacher or a sibling that played? What was the moment of Zen that made you want to be a musician?
Well, first, thank you for that question. I grew up, just for one correction, it's a little hard to get your head around. I live in LA now, but I didn't grow up in a city. I grew up on a dairy farm in the middle of nowhere. So like, when you say like, what city, I was like, the nearest city was Burlington, Wisconsin, 4,000 or 3,000 people, and that was 15 minutes away. There was no store on the corner. I couldn't ride my bike to my friend's house. I was literally by myself with my family and my grandparents and a bunch of varieties of animals all roaming around. And they're still going to this day. But that's a really essential thing, because where my musical, I kind of grew up in a bit of the, probably the end of what could be a time warp, where I, you know, we didn't get internet till way after everybody else. We didn't, you know, it was just one of those things. And so my musical influence was kind of old school. It's like grandpa listening to, you know, Johnny Cash, and he had an accordion concertina that had been passed down through the family for 100 and some odd years, farmer to farmer. And they'd sit around at Christmas and play this thing.
Awesome.
I just inherited his harmonica that's 100 and some odd years old. The concertina, by the way, is a Hohner, which is a type of harmonica. Full circle, I'm endorsed by Hohner harmonicas now. So
that's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? I love that.
Your bass player also plays a Hohner bass, right? I saw in one of the videos.
Yeah, a Hofner. That's a Hofner. Oh, that's the Paul McCartney bass.
That's right.
Yeah. But anyhow, so I got into music that way. My dad, I'd sit literally, you know, so tractors, I'm sure everybody can picture a tractor in mind. Like old school, tractors didn't have like a cab on top, like you were inside like a car. You were out in the open. Well, when I was really young, we got one with a cab and it had a tape deck in it. And I'd sit by his shoulder and he'd play Creedence. He'd play, you know, Bruce Springsteen. He'd play all the Genesis stuff. Like, you know, he loved classic rock, you know, with ZZ Top and all that stuff. That was always cranking. So those were kind of like, my mom always had Motown. And like, she also liked like crazy stuff. Like my mom's 100% Italian she grew up in Kenosha and like Wisconsin. And
Italian population, right? There's a big Italian population.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, and there was a big Italian population there when she was a kid. So she grew up with like crooners. So I like also grew up with like everything from Motown to Mario Lanza. You know what
That's
I mean?
That's awesome. That's so amazing.
So although I was isolated, music was there, and I was I didn't know it at the time, but I was kind of extremely creatively inclined. And I just, Masa, the first minute I could stand up, I was holding the couch and dancing. They gave me a little baseball bat and I used it as a microphone. I don't even know how I knew how to do that. So that's how it started. It just was always there, I think.
When did you pick up guitar as like, okay, this is my voice right here?
That happened late. That was dang near in eighth grade, because where I grew up, there was no guitar players, right? There was nothing. So there were four kids in my class, including me. Okay. By the time I was in eighth grade, we had eight kids in my class. Okay. So
it was
extremely wild.
Well, that's two bands. You think about it, that's two bands right there.
And a guy had come to school and he had a guitar, and he was a transfer in from the public school, and like we were just a little like school attached to the church. It wasn't like a private rich person school. It was a farmer and plumbers sent their kids to this school for generations. You know what I'm saying? By the way, my cat's about to get involved in this.
That's all right. That's all right. My bulldog usually kind of comes in, but I've closed the door for this interview, but usually he won't.
I just gently nudged her towards the food bowl. But anyhow, so that's how it started, man. It just came earnestly and honestly. I got the guitar eighth grade. I had been saving, I got paid $1 an hour to work on the farm, and I had to put 50 cents in the college fund. So little by little I was saving. And then by the time I got to that point, it's just like, I need to get a guitar. I have to get a guitar. Finally my parents were like, you know what? Okay. And then I picked it up, and my mom said, for the first day, she's like, I watched you try to figure out how to play it. And she's like, every day after that, I never saw you not playing music.
Wow.
So it was one of the few things, because I'd tried sports, I'd tried everything. I sucked at it all. It's terrible. I had a lot of heart, no talent. No talent whatsoever. I mean, you do not want to see me on a basketball court. It is a nightmare. But, for some odd reason, when I got the guitar in my lap, I could play. And I started writing. I mean, the first thing I did wasn't like, how do I play someone else's stuff? I'm like, how do I write a song on this thing,
Did you feel, were you like an introvert? Did you feel like you were like, so you were extroverted, and you just felt like this is kind of centering you and kind of giving you a place to kind of express? And, I know Johnny Lee Hooker was a huge influence on you. Starting with blues? Were you starting with like pop rock? Like who was like a major influence right when you started playing?
I was kind of all over the place. As a young man, the early Metallica records spoke to me right away, and it upset, the entire community of people was upset by the sound of that music. Luckily, I never had the kind of parents. My parents were always rad. They never were like, turn that shit down. They were like, take it to the garage, open the door, play your amp out the garage door. And there's nothing around. I'm just playing out into basically there's cows like 100 yards away just looking at me like, what's going on here?
Well, turn up, man. You know what I mean? You can shake the ball.
So that was how it all went down, man. And then I got into high school, and I realized pretty quick, my influences again, though, were like John Lee Hooker, Muddy Waters, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimi Hendrix, Metallica, Zeppelin. It was the stuff you'd expect kind of for a guy that age.
And did you start learning any of that stuff, or did you just start writing and just kind of like learning riffs and then kind of like writing songs and like knowing that this is what you wanted? Did you know this is what you wanted to do right away?
Yeah, man. The moment the guitar went in my lap, every time I learned a chord, I tried to learn how to write a song with it. If I learned three chords that a song had, I'd be like, how do I write a song that has the same three chords? And I'm sure they were just terrible songs, but that's how you start. You're going to stumble and fall. I think that's another thing that I used to teach music for a while to supplement my income before I became creatively solvent, where I was like actually doing this for a living. Right. And one thing I would always tell my adult students, guitar students, is I'd say the most difficult thing is to just allow yourself to learn, to be patient. Because you're doing these, as an adult, you're doing these high level tasks all day. You think, I'm smart, I know what's going on. And then you get a guitar in your lap, you've never played it. And you're like, why can't I play Smoke on the Water?
Right.
I feel like a fool. And you just got to throw all that out the door and be patient. And that goes back to the listening again. It's all patience and listening.
What's so funny about that too, it's like, I came from classical music. So I was actually singing and doing like recordings. I did like a recording with Luther Vandross when I was a young kid, sang for Rod Stewart's Wedding, and did like all this crazy stuff, thinking it was normal, sang at the Grammy Awards, met so many people. I met Miles Davis when I was 11, like just crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. But it was like, once I was in music school, it was like starting all over. It was like learning a different kind of voice. Guitar came into my life and it was like, everything changed at that point. It was like, it was like starting over and having to learn patience, having to learn time. Like, you just need to put time into an instrument. That's like how it goes. And it's like, that never changes no matter what you're doing. Even if it's your, like, you, and I know you feel like this, like when you're curating an album, it's like the album will tell you when it's done. You can never tell the album like, okay, we're going to get this out in 3 months. The album will say, you say 3 months, maybe it's going to be 6, 7, maybe it's going to be 10 months. You know what I mean? Because the art kind of dictates where it's going to go. Do you ever find like an overwhelming amount of inspiration where you're writing a ton of songs all the time? Or are you kind of like a slow curated wine, you know, that just takes time, where you'd like, you're popping out a song maybe once a month or once every 2 months and just like taking your time writing as far as what you're thinking about expressing and kind of like documenting as, you know, in your musical journey?
Yeah, I, it goes in waves of just like everybody else. I sit down every day and I try, I don't try, I write something.
Right.
I write something. And 99.99% of the time, what that something is, when I am done with it, it's usually just going to get filed away into my vast catalog of ideas that I declare right off the bat are not worth hearing, you know, or let me put it better than that. I don't like the way I just said that. I'd say this, not about not worth hearing. It's more about, it's not interesting enough to me to move forward with it. It's not catching me in the beginning. And then, you know, you get that little bit of a percentage. So there are people who are really prolific that can write and write and write and write and write. I think as I've gone on, I've had streaks of where it seems like everything I'm writing feels good. Right. And then streaks where I'm just like, man, it's been a year since I've written anything I even kind of like, and I've got a bunch of stuff here. That's why I like to collaborate too with a band. You know, I've always loved being in a band. Alex is a talented writer. Mark is very good at being part of that process too. Alex wrote so much of this record, and he's just our bass player, Alex.
Yep, and he produced the record. He produced the record, right?
He produced the record, and like, it's just, you just kind of have to embrace, you know, when I was younger, it had to be like, oh, these are my ideas. I'm the singer of the band. I want to, you know, you have that kind of like selfishness. And it's like, if you want to have like it all be you and you'll be the only one to make decisions, that's totally fine. That's why, you know, being a solo artist is out there. But for me, I was like, you know, having grown up the way I did, being on a farm taught me about just being a part of a group of people and trying to get something done together. That always fascinated me. And I was always realistic about what I felt my strengths and weaknesses were with myself. I'm a lot less shy about it now to speak about it publicly than, like, say, maybe years ago. I still would not admit that. It's like, oh yeah, in my head somewhere, there's still that, you know, that John Lennon waiting to explode out. I'm not that guy, man. I'm not that guy, but I can write some really good stuff. And especially when I get in with somebody that inspires me, I'm a performer. I when I'm with somebody that inspires me, it flips the switches all the way on. And then we get some really great work done. But very rarely do I just sit down and put out an entire piece of work by myself and go, this is it. I mean, especially with this group.
Well, I think it's so important to have collaborators, because you know, the one thing that's cool about being in a band, and I know you feel this, it's like you guys against the world. And it's like you feel like, okay, we're going to bounce ideas together. And you as a collective have to believe in these songs and these albums so much, because you are going up against the world and you are pushing these and having to go on the road and like promote and do all these things that are not the most fun musically, you know, where we all just want to like sit and play guitar or play shows and have everything kind of just like there. But like, a lot of people don't understand how much work being a musician is. Like, the travel can be work. The early morning interviews, the, you know, like the rehearsals or the long sessions. I love all of it. Like, it's always been something I embrace. But as I get older, I'm like, oh man, it takes more out of me. You know, I know you can probably understand that, you know, but when it comes time like tapping into the music, there's nothing more special than when you have collaborators bouncing ideas off of. So like, tell me a little bit about that process. Like for me, I love writing a song and bringing it into rehearsal. It's still my favorite part of the whole process, that electricity you feel when a song just first becomes developed. But tell me like what your process is. Are you guys all kind of like throwing lyrics up against the wall and kind of seeing what works? Have like a song kind of composed somewhat? Like, tell me what your process is.
Well, let me hit this question in a way that I have never answered it before. I'm going to take on, instead of like talking about something that I'm creating, I think it might be more interesting, just maybe for both of us and hopefully listener. I want to talk about what happens when you have a very strong opinion about music and someone else brings in an idea.
Oh, cool.
How you deal with that from that angle. Okay, you're the singer in a group, you have the ability to write melodies, lyrics, or you're the drummer, or you're the guitar player, you're the keyboard player now. So if you're a musician, or if you're a writer or a painter or whatever you're doing, just put yourself in that position. Somebody you are working with is coming with a great idea. Where it gets interesting is that you always are inclined to contribute. You know, you want to contribute your own feelings, your own words, your own melodies. And sometimes you have to dig in really deep into the material and tear it up. But the key is communication in a positive way. If you were just like, oh, dude, I don't dig that word, you know, I'm going to change it. Use that kind of tone, man, you might as well just go home. But if you're like, you know what, man, that's really inspiring stuff, man. I would have never thought of that. You know what, though? Have you thought about this? That's how I've learned to collaborate in a more positive way. And I think it's a really valuable lesson to curate as a musician that doesn't get talked about that often. Some people are naturally that way. Now I, you know, moving out here, I wasn't much about the signs and but they tell me I'm a dead center Sagittarius. So if you're a sign person out there, I'm a charging kind of guy. And, it's not so natural for me. It took time to go, you know what, be sensitive to this person's ideas as you would your own. And I think that is like, no matter how good you are at that, you can always be better. And if you're the one in the band that always feels like, man, none of my ideas are getting in there, there are two questions to ask yourself. Are you standing hard and asserting your belief and making sure they're listening? And is it good enough, really?
Right.
If you step outside yourself, is it getting there? Is it flipping the switch? Or are you just like, man, I haven't gotten anything on this record yet? It's like, best idea wins if you really want to get a great record together.
I always say that I have a songwriting team where we write for other artists. And it's like, whenever I have writers all in a room, I always tell them, be at the mercy of the best idea in the room. Like literally, you have to put your ego to the side. Yeah. And like whenever that's like the best creations are when ego's not involved. We all know that. So it's like putting that on the shelf and just really kind of listening and embracing the best idea in the world. To me, it's like when somebody comes up with a lyric or when somebody comes up with even in band rehearsals, when somebody comes up with like an arrangement, which I love band arrangements where they're hits and like little things like that. We do a lot of that stuff just because I find it to be super captivating and interesting when you're in a live setting, because it's like, we all can't wait to get to this, you know, lick that we're all going to hit together or a stop or something like that, that just makes the arrangement interesting. But it's like, you have to just be at the mercy of the best idea in the room and also be willing to try anything. So like, even if you're like, this is gonna suck, try it. So I always like, anybody says something, I'm like, let's try it. Because if you put that, you know, like to the side, that sense of like, I need myself in this to be creative, then it's like, it's gonna kill it, you know. But if you at least take yourself out and just experiment, you just know that it could be boundless, you know, it could be just unending what the possibilities are. And I love that recipe, because it's like, you're going to find it one way or another if you do it. You know what I mean? So I love that you have that attitude. And I have to tell you, that takes great humility on your part. That is why you're creating the music that you are, because it's the sense of humility that you have to put into the art. And that's something that takes a lot of time, as you know. And and I think a lot of it is also maturing. It's maturing because I can definitely attest to when I was in my 20s starting a band, it was like, okay, I'm like the steam train. I'm gonna be the, you know, steam train that leads this, and it's gonna lead into water or it's gonna lead into the skies, you know, like wherever I get it. But it's like as you get older, you're like, let's let some of the other parts of this machine be a force that keeps this moving, because it's gonna be way more rewarding for everybody as a group, as a collective. It's like some of the parts, you know.
If what's happening in the room is not inspiring, you're a part of that.
Right.
You have to own your part of that. Sometimes being inspiring is listening. Sometimes being inspiring is speaking. This is just me about what I've learned. I'm not saying these are absolutes. They're little road signs that I have learned, but either been told or found out through a shitload of mistakes, shitload. And what is experience really? Experience is, I don't want to do that again. I like that. I'll do that. You know? And from my experience, a lot of the resistance to when you're like, that's going to be lame, it's coming to me when I have that reaction. It's really, that's another thing that I've kind of learned to just go stop. Like I have these little flag posts that I put up in my head, that, like these little signs that I can just pull out in a second. And stop is one of them where I'm like, wait, stop. Is this fear motivated?
Yes. Oh, I love that.
You know, it's like, are you afraid of where it could go, or that you're not the one that brought it forward? Right. So for me, creation is a three element process, just to give you, whether you're by yourself or with a group. For me, this is what I've learned. Create from your heart, silently out and openly. And like when we're in the moment of creation, use your heart, let it fly. Try to keep out of its way. Like when you're writing.
I got chills.
Edit, step two, edit with the mind. Edit with the mind. So the mind is not ignored. The mind is an essential piece of the process.
Right.
And the mind can be all the stuff that can come in with the mind, might be where you do bring something forward to somebody else and see what their mind and heart reacts. And then you have to decipher, and then you go back, and maybe you're back down in the heart, or you're up in the mind and the heart. But I will tell you one thing, the third step's the most important, and I choose to use this word, and you can fix any meaning you want. The soul tells you when it's done.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So, absolutely.
Create from the heart, edit from the mind, process, process, process. Your soul lets you know when it's over.
I would say I agree with
that. Or a deadline.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, too. And you know what? I definitely think imagination is like so much of the ingredient with all of this stuff too. It's like, I think every part of the process is connected to that. So as long as that's always kind of like making its way in there, you're always going to create something great. So tell me what this process is like. When did you move to LA and just start? I know you guys met like in Los Feliz, I think is when you guys all kind of congregated. So like what age were you when you were like, I'm going to go to LA and I want to do this music thing? Did you know any of the cats before? Did you just all meet here when you moved? Like, tell me what that process was like.
We met here when I moved, and I got married to my wife, who I'm still with, and had been with since college.
She's awesome. It was great to meet her and you at the same time.
Super rad. When we met, I was hosting an open mic, and she was a waitress, and now she works, you know, pretty decent level at Sony Pictures as an executive over there. And then I'm doing this. So it's like, that's another teamwork thing, is like having people around you. I'm sorry, I'm getting off of your question, but we're kind of hitting on some stuff that I never talk about openly. And I think it's like with this long form that it allows for some other things. I think you need to be surrounded by people who are honest and loving and supportive. If you're constantly getting dogged, put down, and not a like help you find the light kind of way, but more of a help you be crushed down ashamed of your creativity.
Right.
You need to get away from that if you want to be creative. Whether it doesn't mean you have to leave the person, but you have to find a space away from them at the very least to go and do it. I've been fortunate where my wife, when I met her, You know, we were 22 and 23. And every time, and when I was 27, I had that moment with her where I was like, okay, I've always had this in my mind. At 27, I'm either all in or I got to turn this ship around. You know, I'm like, and go for a career. And she was like, are you out of your mind? You cannot stop. And there, and let me tell you, when she said that, I didn't have a pot to piss in. I didn't have a dollar in my name then. That's, you know, awesome. So it was, I was lucky that way, but I also was smart enough to know this is a beautiful human being. I'm going to hold on to her, good times and in bad. But the beauty is we're truthful to each other, and that's essential, you know. And with the band, it's the same thing. It's like, yes, initially there's this great attraction of respect, but when you're going to make the music, essentially when you're going to, you know, be intimate creatively, right, you have to, there's got to be a respect that lasts, built on honesty, mm-hmm, and humility,
yep,
and self-accountability, and holding others accountable. So all of that is all part of how these records come to be. You know, it's a little bit, it's not the you know, according to Hoyle way of answering this question, but it's kind of, I think there's a lot of spiritual element underneath music.
Yep.
Because we are always trying to figure out, how do we do this? How do I make a living? How do I, you know, they used to say make it. I don't really think that's a term that we throw around in the music industry anymore. If you're a musician, you go, I'm either solvent, I'm making a living, or I'm wishing I could. That's basically where you're at.
Well, and there's the hustle and the flow. That's like, right. I always think of that. Like, am I hustling or am I allowing the flow to come? It's like, and I think I feel that way when I'm writing, whether I'm grinding it out on the road, where I'm like playing festivals, or if I'm, you know, whatever the process is, even just making a record, there's a different sense of like you're in an incubator trying to get that hustle and flow. Like, what is going to be the reach of this, the trajectory of every musical thought? And I feel like that's always on my mind, the hustle and the flow. Like, am I digging in or am I allowing, you know, riches to kind of come through, whether it's soul, financial, whatever it is. And I put soul almost above any of it because, man, I have tons of friends making lots of money that are hating their jobs and their lives, and it's like music isn't that. It's like I feel like, you know, no matter what my paydays are, if I write a great song in a day, that is the greatest payment that the universe can give me, because it's all I think about, it's all I want out of life. And I think that life experience, I don't know if you think like this, but I always think like this, you know, this is what I'm leaving the world with. So it's like, if I can come up with something that is beautiful and from the heart, using imagination, and create something and leave that with the world, that is my, that's my dharma. That's my zen. That is like why I was put on the planet. And I know you feel that way because your band has this electricity within the three of you when you guys create. And that's what I saw when I saw you at the Knitting Factory. But how old were you when you, did you move out here when you were 22, 23?
Oh, I was 32 years old when I
moved out. Wow. Okay. So, and then
I'm in my mid 40s now.
That's awesome. Same. We're kin. You know what? It's funny. It's like we met, you know, at a local.
And I'm proud of it.
That's right.
It's the mileage counts, man. You know, I used to, you know, that was one of the funny things when I first moved to LA. It was like, it was a lot of like hung up. I people be like, oh, don't tell anybody you're, when I first moved, don't tell anybody you're 33, dude.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, at the time, I'm like playing, you know, I play pedal steel and stuff, and I found kind of a little niche that got me into a community. Is like, I was coming from pedal steel, lap steel, harmonica, and there was this budding little Americana like scene starting, and yeah, I got in some bands and I could sing and arrange, but I was 10 years older than everybody I was hanging with, you know? So it was really, when I actually think about the position that I allowed myself to be placed in, I could have I'm not one to have panic attacks, but I could get real close to an anxiety attack just picturing what kind of insanity that was to even try to do that. But
yeah, but you had the gusto. You had the gusto to kind of like, you know, and how did you guys meet as a band? Did you meet in, out of bands playing together, or did you kind of like congregate like one at a time?
You know, we met in the like probably the most, I don't know, one of the more, it's kind of out of the, it was in and then it's out, but it's like, it's the least sexy story ever, man. I was desperate to meet people that wanted to play music. I was playing in bands, but I hadn't fronted a band in a while. And after being like, you know, I'd always been the lead guy in a band or the singer, you know, front guy. And I just was really missing it. and I'm playing like in some really cool bands, and I'm like, you know, arranging all these parts, and, you know, but I wasn't, my songs weren't getting written, you know, I was, it just didn't feel right. I didn't feel like I was in the seat I should be in. So my wife, who is, you know, really good at advertising, is like, hey, you know what you should do? She's just a forward thinker. See, this is where she's, her and I are so valuable. She's like, put something up on Craigslist. I'm like, oh, and I like, awesome. this is what I thought. Because where I was from in Milwaukee, you didn't go on Craigslist if for any reason other than to like buy some furniture or see if there's an old guitar down the road. You surely didn't go in and go, hey, I want to play in a band. And I had just come from an area in Wisconsin where I was a pretty well-known guy as far as in the scene. You know, I wasn't packing thousands of people in, but if I needed a drummer, I knew every drummer in town. They knew me, you know. So I put this ad up. Alex, our bass player, who was, we're all the exact same age. That's also what's weird.
That's awesome.
He had been in town. He had graduated, you know, with him and Mark had met at a school called Bucknell, which is kind of a, you know, highfalutin, really, you got to be pretty smart to get into that school. And they had a full ride, both of them, for academics. And Mark actually was a punter. He punted.
That's amazing.
I was in a field goal kicker and, you know, whatever. And, they had been out here 10 years and they were coming to the end. They were like,
wow,
they're, you know, and I was coming in with all this horsepower. I'm like, if it kills me, you know, I just was like, when we decided we had to move here, I was like, baby, if we go, I am going for it with everything I got. I'm like, I don't know. My clock is ticking and I got to go. And so I did. I mean, and that ad attracted Alex's eye, who was just like, well, you know, I've been playing guitar for years. Maybe I want to play bass. And I had a bass playing ad and I had just written it out kind of like from the heart and it wasn't that great. And then my wife,
you were like, I want a blues influenced band.
No, I just said, here's the shit I dig. I want to play real instruments, drums, bass, guitar. Let's go. You know, I play this, here's a link to my, you
That's
know,
awesome. Some
of that stuff. And, Val, I can't remember if in the lineage of it or in the timeline of it, Val, at some point I was playing at Austin City Limits Festival with playing pedal steel for like kind of like an Americana country band. And it was at the time where it was like, this was like what, 11 years ago. So it was just at the point where you couldn't go on your iPhone and do it. So I was like, baby, can you just go on the computer and refresh my Craigslist ad? And she wrote, saw my ad and she's like, this is not going to get him anybody cool. So she like went in there and did the thing you're supposed to do, which I can't do being from the Wisconsin. She's like, totally a touring act. You know, I'm a guy who's been doing this, that, and the other thing, which was bullshit. And it got Alex's attention. And then when he called me, he was like kind of disappointed, I think, that I was not that cool. But we ended up hanging out, listening to, he had a really great vinyl collection. He was kind of ahead of the curve on that as far as like the resurgence. He had amassed this huge collection, you know.
We got to listen to records sometime, man. I've got tons. Man.
So then we got together and, you know, I walked right into his house and he had a box of records that some uncle or something had left. It was all old blues. He's like, I don't know much about this. And I went right in there and I pulled out Muddy Waters Live at Newport 1916 and never been opened. I'm like, this right here is where we start. And
that's amazing.
In that minute, we were brothers.
Well, let's play a little bit of sneak a peek for the fourth album that you guys have. We're going to play this, and we're going to come back and talk to Chris a little bit more. Here's the sneak peek.
And now, when am I bringing the harp in?
On those rock outs for now.
The rock outs?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
We've been through a lot of ups and downs these last couple years, but we always find we do our best work when we do it ourselves, when the three of us get in a room together and just make music.
I'm working on myself. I got this feeling I'm gonna win. No, I'm working on myself.
We were facing uncertainty in the music business. We had to cancel a tour that wasn't selling well, and we were dropped by the record label right before Christmas. The only way to make this record was to go back to basics. We still had the cheap recording gear from our first album, the garage sale drum set, but we still had to find the songs and the spirit.
We made the decision to double down at that point. Let's make this record by ourselves. Let's make it honest.
and Alex, the bass player, you're going to produce it, my man. And that's what we did. And that made our record better.
We dug really deep on the songwriting, which captures where we were emotionally during this time. If the lyrics were going to be raw and honest, the music needed to be as well. We put away fancy production tricks and click tracks in favor of a more stripped-back approach.
My soul ain't feeling right. Gates are opening and no one inside. Weight on your head, eyes are blurred. I'm coming at you like a folded world.
When we're together, all heading in the same direction, there's nothing that feels that way to me in my life that I can get from any other source than playing with Alex and Mark. That's what makes it special to me, and I think that's what makes it unique for the listener.
I will, lady, come rescue me.
We really strive to grow, find each other, and we love each other.
So dope. You know what's cool is you guys were signed, you were getting, you know, on tours and doing that. Tell me what that process was like. Like, you've been through kind of a whirlwind. Like, you guys were playing, you were gigging, you got signed, you were on tours playing with your heroes like BB King and John Mayer and all these cool experiences, and then you guys got dropped right before Christmas, which, dude, that is such a record label thing to do. It's like, you couldn't have waited till January? Like, you couldn't have waited? Man,
never wait. No, it's like, I'm like this. Here's my thing. I want to make this very clear. I don't agree with the decision. Right. But I respect it. I respect the decision. You know, my thing is, like, when the moment you are like, this isn't for me, you know, we had done three records and a bunch of new people had come in and they had their own things they wanted to do. So I didn't actually, you know, having processed it now and actually feeling like that was a kick in the pants that made the record better, I'm actually kind of grateful that I'm not, you know, would have been nicer to have it go another way? Yeah, but maybe we wouldn't have the record we have now. So yeah, you know, you weigh one against the other. But we had a chance, like it says in that video, which I haven't seen in a while, so that's kind of fun to watch that. We made a decision. It was like, look, we just had to cancel a tour because we're dead broke and nobody was buying tickets. It was post-COVID. We had put out a record that had, you know, we were cooped on it, but it was like, this was supposed to be, you know, we were coming into this third record and it was like all the chatter that you hear, which is another thing I want to tell musicians, is like Jimi Hendrix once said, is like, watch out for compliments. They're never really always the truth, you know? And it's like, he said, they're never the truth. Actually, the truth is what he said, I think. I think there is a lot of truth in them, but you got to always kind of remember, like, when you're in a business dealing, to listen to your heart again, you know, and say, like, am I feeling what's being said here? Is this like, you know, because anybody can, if you're a musician and you're like starving for some love, and you walk into a room and somebody's like, I love your stuff, we're behind you 100%, blah blah blah, you know, but at the same time, I don't think it's good for, as a musician, at least in my experience, to walk in there like with your feathers all ruffled up and be like, I'm going to tell you what I think, you know. It's like, let's start this conversation as we're interested in possibly doing something. Right. So by the time we got signed, I mean, I don't know how old the label thought I was, but I was dang near 40 by the time I got signed.
That's amazing. But that's amazing.
Yeah, I was in my late 30s. And when I put the pen on the paper, this is something I'd been picturing since that day I was 14. And I made that promise to myself. The first, and I'm not ashamed to say this at all, I'm proud to share this. Let yourself feel stuff, especially in moments like that. The first thing that hit that page was not ink. It was a tear out of my eye. And I'm not joking, because I remember watching it go down and hit the paper. And I turned to my bass player, Alex. I said, the first thing on this page was a tear. I hope it remains happy. You know, but so the decision happened. We got canned. Or, you know, the way they say it in the industry is, we didn't pick up the option, which is a polite way of saying, we don't dig what you're doing, not for us, you know, go be well, you know, nobody, we have a lot of friends over there at that label that have, I owe a ton, the whole promotion staff, the radio team, they've made us, the reason that you and I know each other is because of the work of some of these people. So it's not an all across the board thing. The big thing though, is that you have a moment, you know, I've found that the music business is, from what I have experienced, it's at critical moments going to ask you if you're ready to push every chip in the middle of the table against all definable logic simply because you got a feeling you're on the right track. And that is so scary every time, but you got to do it. It is the read. And that's another thing. Read all the books, read everything. You'll see it's like they, you know, Nirvana sold all of their guitar equipment to make Bleach. You know, it's like, and you go, well, that was a smart thing to do. Well, I bet it wasn't a very fun thing to do when they were like, okay, I guess we're eating, you know, ramen noodle, like the 25-cent ramen noodles for the next couple of months, because I don't know how I'm going to keep a roof over my head. They did that. Every act you care about.
And that's what I respect about this record. We're going to play another video real quick. But you guys made a record on your own. You didn't pivot and say, okay, well, that's the end of that. You actually came back with something even better. Let's play Dance on Mondays. Here's Dance on Mondays by the record company.
I ain't never giving up. Stuck in a dead end, but you didn't know it. The roads don't all connect. Your body stopped moving, but you didn't notice. Sometimes a dead end is all you get. Look out, I got a little bit of fire. Look up, I got a little bit of grit. We'll be right back.
One thing I'm having, I can't hear the slide at all.
I love that. I love that. Every guitar player says the same thing. We often say the same thing.
Can't hear the slide, man.
I have two quick questions. I never asked this, and I always wanted to know. Tell me why you guys called yourselves the record company.
We didn't think anyone would sign us in L.A. We kind of, it was a very polite, like, you know, well, if that's the way it's going to be, we'll call ourselves a record company. You know, it was a bit of a punk rock, like, I guess I would say, you know, it had a little bit of that, like, yeah. You know, it wasn't an angry move, but we knew what we were doing, you know.
It sounds I mean, you definitely have, like, it caught my attention, you know, years ago when I'd see it in Rolling Stone. I'm like, this band just sounds cool that they're, like, mocking record company by calling themselves the record company. You know what I mean? So
it was a funny thing to do. It felt like, well, this is the first time in the history of music that you can call yourself this, because at that time, especially 2012, 2011, there was all these questions on what was going to happen. Were there ever going to be labels again? So it was like that all was wrapped in there, you know?
Well, we're running out of time, Chris, but you know what? You have an open invitation to come back. That's the why I set up this whole model. Thank I got you. Tired of, doing radio shows and talk shows where people didn't do their research, and I could talk music with you all day, man. This new album, if you had to pick three words to describe this new album, what would they be?
It's all true.
Ooh, I love that. I love that. This is the record company with the fourth album. On behalf of myself, Sam, and Chris, thanks for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. Chris, we're going to have you back. You guys are a band to watch. You're a band to follow. And, dude, we need to play sometime. We definitely have to jam and make some music together. Yeah.
Maybe you can teach me how to play some classical music, because I have no
idea. I'm ready, bro. Well, we're going to play out a little clip of Talk to Me, but check out the record company on their next tour. Check out their new record, the fourth album. On behalf of Sam, myself, and I, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time. Peace and
you're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.